You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with David Grin. He's director of Dada Editions and also film at Art Basel and Art Projects. David, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Dada Editions, if you don't mind, to begin with.
Well, so Dada Editions comes really from, I guess, I've been working with artists moving image in the context of the cinema, trying to get audiences to appreciate it over 17, 18 years as a pretty tight focus. And I guess if I was to cut to the chase, I kind of realized there needs to be some kind of empowerment to artists making the work and the marketplace. And I guess I've been fighting that because probably personal, politically, I'm not that enamored by the market or its process with the art world, but it's a reality that we face and it is part of our art world. So I guess it emerged realistically from 5 to 7 years of doing intensive projects with art fairs where I'm talking all the time to galleries, trying to encourage them to show their artists' films and find the right process to do so, and realizing that this is still a battle. And I guess the business came about from a conversation with a leading art collector and philanthropist, Anita Zabludovich, who's been a mentor, a supporter to what I'm doing, who we came together as how we could do something that betters the status for artists who are making this work, which is endemic right now in the production, but it's not in the exhibition. And we felt we'd like to try something out that was a kind of boutique niche platform that would be based platform native too for works that are made for that outlet. Video, sound, web-based work. These are just words. Obviously, video is not really the best word to describe is the one that's a shorthand in our art world. And Data came about through that work, but it's also with other visions of how do you keep artists at the center of a project and not get over-bombarded by the enamorment of .com for, you know, hedge fund benefits. So it's how does artists benefit from a platform that can show their work, and how can you bring in some revenue to pay them more money? We pay them to start with, so there's not a kind of case of put up your free material and we'll try and find a way. They start off being paid to make it, and there's a royalty on top. So it was how do artists get that process, but also keeping them at the center of a project. And that's, I guess, when we launched in New York a few months ago during the Freeze Art Fair and NADA Art Fair, I made a few talks and I used the word we're hoping to empower the marketplace and empower artists, and I think they're important together. And I then would obviously a few times say after that, you know, I hope this ideology infuses those that are around us, because if artists aren't being paid to make the work, it's a bit of a struggle here on in. And, you know, I've hoped that other forms would emerge better to support artist practice, and you know there aren't enough of them. And I think digitally we could do with the big competition out there of building lots of projects, but currently that's not easy either. And in my film video exhibition world that I've been working at, I found that the level of competition in that area is really minimal because the outcomes are very precarious and there's very little financial input or output that comes into it. And so it was interesting because I came to Art Basel to work with them for Miami Beach on their film program, because the fair itself came to me saying we don't show film well enough because galleries aren't bringing it. We need a way of encouraging them. So what I see my role is as an empowerer, facilitator, conduit, kind of encouraging galleries to show their artists' work at the major art fair and art fairs. I've worked with others, and I am working with other projects too.
Is there a larger idea there about artists getting paid, a paradigm of artists getting paid that you're supporting?
I kind of believe in doing things and making things happen. And I kind of see a lot of things don't happen because people are waiting for revenue. And if we, I actually don't associate the art world with revenue. So it's how one can find those models by which you can create revenue streams that make sense or alternative ways of thinking. How do you show work where people around the work aren't prepared to pay for it to be shown? How do you get things shown for free? You know, I mean, I've been doing all that for a long, long time, but I've stuck at it. So I guess I've been through quite a few hurdles to stay at it, but I still wake up the next day and carry on. And I guess it's not been based around some kind of deep-rooted hedge fund business model, albeit I know some great business models and great hedge funds, and it's not, I don't want to denigrate those because I think they're valid in their own way. It's just I see the art world somewhat differently, and I think it needs to be treated differently. And it's what, you know, as I was trying to say before, when Art Basel came to me and said, you know, we struggle with an art form, I was very impressed that, you know, a very well-known commercial center for showing art via galleries is trying to find ways of showing art forms that don't sell easily or at all. I've recently introduced sound into Art Basel in a big but small way. I mean, I softly did it last year with commissioning four works because the place I have to work with in Miami has a surround sound system that's borderline second to none in a park with 160 speakers, and it dawned on me a few years ago, why don't we use it to show artists' work? But it's still trying something that is, you know, people's attention span at those moments are really limited. And, I mean, I work with an art fair, and I've worked with art fairs for probably over 20 years, but I still don't believe in them as the sort of paramount model that we need to support. I think the institution needs to take more control, and the galleries, maybe control or exert their power better, because I feel like we've sort of lost it to the sort of cycle of continual art fairs in our art world. Then the art, it becomes just an art market.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I know recently in Canada, they enacted a law to help give artists fees when showing at national galleries and spaces, because traditionally artists aren't paid fees for inclusion in shows or creating installations. Is that a possible direction?
No, I kind of really get what you're saying. I believe there needs to be a shift in a communication and a conversation. How does everybody benefit in our ecosystem? And how can we work with each other? And I think that's more interesting to me than how do you pay artists a nominal fee of, you know, $10 to $200 to participate in something, which in some cases might cause the non-profit institution a big problem. And so it's very, you know, good, I think, to think that artists should be paid to participate, but then they have outcomes sometimes that they sell their work via a gallery. I have probably more interested the commercial ends of the art world paying for their role in the art world, but then that causes a problem because most galleries find it difficult to exist, and we just see the news headlines of the auction house and the big blue chip galleries, but you know, it's kind of, as a model, we have this kind of strange finance model associated with the art world, and I think it's that finance model that has to shift, as opposed to, well, I need to be paid because you've shown my work. Well, you might show my work and sell it, so therefore the model's very simple. Somebody else might show my work and I get notoriety, and I then sell it via my gallery in the future. Or I show my work ongoing over and over again and don't sell it at all and no one cares about me. You know, it's which one wins, which one loses. I mean, in a way, that's been our nature of any business, any world. But it gets confusing when we dominate the art world by the auction house or by the art fair or by the gallery, the blue chip gallery. It over-dominates and they don't think how to compensate the artist. I find it difficult that artists don't get allowed into those ecosystems easily. That's probably of more interest to me, of seeing more artists and students at art fairs, at big gallery openings. I think they create the reality of why we have those things, and yet they're disincluded, because now it's become like a kind of, they become playthings for people who have means, and that's wrong, because that funds the art world. But I think you need to find a language that we can kind of fuse the two together at any given point.
So do you have an example of that? How the financial shift?
I don't have like a specific model, because I think it's the communication. I'm working with someone who really thinks that way. Anita Zabludovich of the Zabludovich Collection, and when we talk about how we empower artists and students, and we talk about feminism, we talk about artists who feel excluded. That conversation can also exist because we've spent a lot of time in the art world seeing that there's a need, yeah? As opposed
right.
to sort of, there's a lot of, if we could take away the, it's a bit like people entering in the art world and just seeing the surface, like they just see the champagne bubbles on the top. And actually, it is an art, there is a world there. There is an actual training that people go through. Even great collectors go through a training where they spend maybe 10, 20 years learning and accumulating knowledge, not just accumulating art and dealing with their wealth side. There are very few of those. I think we've gone down that path of the sort of champagne reception for the hedge fund release, the new gallery that's got tons of money, and we pander towards money at every spot in our ecosystem, as opposed to how does that work get made? I feel it starts off, should start off, and I do lots of projects with art schools, and you see the kind of need now of art students to make a living as they leave art school. And they're entering into the art world, but they're entering to an art world that making a living isn't a natural part of the equation easily. But they have to pay their school fees or the bills that come in straight away. So I think we need to find solutions to that. And I'm not trying to obfuscate the kind of answer, because I think I'm shaping my own ones, but I haven't got, I exist in my own world on a kind of zero, and I kind of still survive. And I work with people who have a lot of means, and, their worlds need a certain type of survival process just to keep their worlds going. I don't think there's a right answer of how one keeps one's world going, but I think there's an ideology of what seriousness we treat the things that we want to support, or the things we want to look at, how we regard them, and how we train them. And I think what I've noticed with the students that I lecture or come across is most of them are thinking about how they're going to get a job to become an artist, as opposed to how they're going to become an artist and how are other people going to find ways of supporting that work or that need to make that work. Because how do we have an art and culture world if people aren't finding solutions to put it on, pay for them? But I don't want it to be a world where we're looking to pay them the odd $20 here or there, or the odd $100 because they've sort of spent a month of working on something. I think, there has to be other outputs or many different versions that we can look to, many different models. And Kickstarter is one kind of model, but we need more models. In England we have the Arts Council, but there is only the Arts Council. There isn't many funding bodies. There's sort of private philanthropy, but it isn't as ingrained as it is in America. It's slightly an ugly subject, and people always think somebody else is on the gain and on the make if they're a philanthropist, whereas most philanthropists I know do it from a genuine source of desire to help others. I think with art, back to what I'm doing with Data Editions, it's the idea of it is to create a model, not the model. I think we have too many the models shaped in our dot-com worlds, and even now
right.
in every world, where we have the dominant art center, the dominant gallery, the dominant artists, the Damien Hirst, the Tate Gallery, the Art Basel, the Frieze, they're all brilliant. So in their own terms, they're all brilliant, but they make the news stories. It's what do we do with the people who make the brilliant art that don't make the news stories, and how do we find a way of accommodating them? Because they are equal to the news story grabbers. They just don't have the means to get their press teams or PR companies hustling the press and the art press all the time. And that's possibly one of the differences. Some of them are really skillful at fundraising for themselves. What I also would like is to see how people can fundraise or support those around them to keep the art ecosystems going. That's sort of how my brain probably operates best when it tries to think who else can benefit from the worlds I'm encountering, not just myself, but, you know, not just the artist. How does the gallery benefit? Because if they benefit, they then serve back their artist. And, you know, the collectors then go back to that gallery because the gallery still exists. The art fair existing is good if it's a good art fair. But we've now got this proliferation of art fairs, and they're never going to stop as long as there's a big business model there. And some of them are brilliant, and some of them are just, you know, this ever-ending cycle of places where sort of mediocre galleries, mediocre artists can show their work. And we've got no way of stopping it because it's a business model. But the judgment value in it has gone all, I think, a little bit strange. I really think it's great to have as many versions of things as possible, because no one funder can fund everything. So we need lots of. But I think we also need that idea of self-sustainability. So the idea that the artist can find the ways, and that is back to kind of the billion-dollar question. But to be self-sustaining is the idea that artists go through art school and their own internal training. How do I carry on to be an artist? Or how do I carry on to make what I do or do what I do best myself without the need for others? Because I think that's, you know, obviously you can sell your work, so that's getting funded somehow, but that is some part of self-sustaining. But I believe there needs to be more models how we can support that, which maybe is, you know, this is sort of so broad a subject, I guess it kind of...
Right. Well, philanthropy is one of the, obviously, avenues of that, from Kickstarter to individuals to other types of...
I guess I've created models before for institutions and art fairs, how to fund new things. And it's a great challenge, and what it is, you know, but you also need the people who care. And I think you get the care is really the bit which I think maybe needs the education on, because you get the care, regardless of how it benefited them financially, you get the care of the people like Bloomberg, UBS, Deutsche Bank, who support some big art things. That creates an ecosystem. The ecosystem then feeds galleries, artists, art fairs, whatever. It's feeding something. But you often then get the other funders who actually just want a moment in the spotlight. They just want to get new clients. They just want that because they don't see the value of what art does for itself. So I guess that education shift, and that's back to the best philanthropists, the private ones. They might collect art, but they also see what it does when you support an artist to eke a living out, and, you know, and does it with the right heart and the right soul. And that's harder to quantify, the heart and soul, because you can't really do sort of intellectual interviews on that. But I kind of think it's probably where we need to all go better, because we could discuss the kind of rudiments of it all and the infrastructures and ecosystems, but going down the path of, you know, passion, love, soul is probably when one has that, one really knows it. Everyone who sees it knows it in any walk of life. But when it comes down to our art world, we all get quite kind of, oh, we want to be at the next cool thing. We want to be seen at the right event. We want to be invited to the next dinner. We want the right invite. And not many people work out how you support the system that they want to be so much part of.
Hmm. Do you think one example is, and this is something that I've seen recently in some nonprofits in the United States,
setting it up so that artists can act as though they are institutions almost unto themselves, and philanthropists give them money for the same reason they give it to nonprofits, for the joy of being associated with that nonprofit.
I think that's brilliant. I mean, I think that's a brilliant solution, and it comes from an American way. I'm not saying everything American is brilliant, but there is an American way of entrepreneurial spirit. Now, I would say, just to kind of, you know, a feeling I get of someone who lives in England but actually is American, and I think of myself as global where possible. I don't like to think I belong any one place, but I love where I live, and I give back to it. I don't have any problem with that at all. And I'm just not led by passport. But I think where we've established a pretty much a public, you know, subsidy thing through the Arts Council. That, to me, there's a sort of a logic here that I'm just going to go through, is that,
sure,
like you talk about this self-sustaining model, that you work to train the artists to have their own sort of funding ecosystem, because of a public model where you kind of feel less like it's less personal, less, you know, like you just apply for funding and either you get it or don't. And then once you get it, you can start possibly getting it more regularly because you're in the funding ecosystem and you know how to do it better. There's two problems I see. One is there's a reliance on it. So once it dries out suddenly, you see a lot of organizations just collapsing. And an organization is often the thing that pays the artist. So if you lose organization, you often lose the artist being funded too, because, you know, the organization that specializes in moving image shuts down. The artist who was getting some grants from that organization through the Arts Council loses out too. But then there's a prickly kind of pear kind of situation where, because there's limited funds, everyone's vying for the same pool. So you don't get, what I've noticed over years is this thing, and often I notice it most like a sort of these places like film festivals where art meets film, where you've got these people like artists or art projects coming to the film festival looking at how they're going to try and get funding for their next project. And then you've got these film projects trying to get funding for, and everyone's looking for these same pools of funding, but they're not really looking, how do we collaborate and how could we find a way to benefit each other somewhat? And I think that's I've sort of got into the film meets art world funding without giving it a sort of bit more specific. Let me try and explain. You get the artists who think that they see the Hollywood film model that gets millions, billions into a film must be possible. So you go to all these people to fund the artworks, but they're not really interested in that. They're interested in box office and global outreach that gets millions of people in cinemas. That isn't the art world. Then you get the film world who think that the art world has lots of collectors and funders and philanthropists swarming like bees around it who want to just give money to artists. And then I've even had filmmakers say, oh, we'll make some artworks so that we can get collectors supporting our next film. And it's just this madness of thinking that the art collector's going to buy an artwork made by someone who isn't an artist just to kind of, because they buy art. So that's this lack of knowledge of what art is, because everyone thinks what they make is art, which is true. It might be an art form, but it isn't part of the rudiment role structure that we're in with the contemporary art world, which obviously I'm stating the obvious and speaking to the converted with you, but it's I keep coming across it, which, and then I sometimes think of these things, wouldn't it be great if the big funded bodies, like the big film projects that have big producers that bring in millions, could find a way to work with the arts organizations or the artists somehow and share, because films are quite good at sharing money, whereas art world isn't as good at sharing money because there's not as much of it. So it's kind of that area which I'm trying to get at and probably being a bit clumsy in doing so. But it's sort of constantly interesting, but I'm not quite sure. It's like, you know, if you've got to put, let's give you an example. There's an artist that's got $5,000 to make a film, and then there's a film. Anyway, that's $5,000. What does an artist do when they share that? They give it out. They've made the film. They've got nothing left to survive on. when you've got a, you know, maybe a feature film, there's many millions or hundreds of thousands going even into a low budget one. You can pay crew, you can pay cast, you can pay the caterers, you can get goods around it that get paid. So in a way, the team spirit of that role is kind of inherent in the process. Artists are really, I keep being approached by film production companies because they want to try and find artists who are really self-sufficient, who know how to do things on really low budget, at budgets at high value. And that's that quirky thing, because then they haven't got much budget, so they think, oh, we'll go to the artists who are brilliant at making art for no crew and no money.
Right.
And, you know, there are very few artists who are able to suddenly come into a film crew and work it out, like Steve McQueen's or Sam Taylor Woods. They're not all lining up behind me yet. And a lot of, you know, back then you've got other things like, you know, do they have a thing to say or do they have charisma? And I'm not suggesting that those two artists are my model, but they are the model we use to talk to about the success story. Anyway.
It's very interesting and seems appropriate for...
And I still think it's confusing, and I've often said at conferences, if you had the banker in the corner, all the film producers would be like looking towards that person, and the film, even filmmakers. And if you see the director of Tate Modern in the other corner, all the artists are going to be looking there. I mean, the artists who want their work to be in that building, and it's they're still sitting in the same conferences, working out how do we make our film and distribute it. But this idea of distributing, there's a different distribution model to this thing that might have, you know, millions of people watching it in cinemas and online worldwide, or this other one which might have hundreds of people, if hundreds is gets there, because art has got a different process, it's got a different demand on audience, it's got a different drive. It's not necessarily the art that's in the Tate Modern or MoMA, it's the building itself. It's this idea of the unknown that you're going to go and see is often driving an audience into that place, or the encounter with an artwork, which is a one-on-one often.
A lot of interesting things to think about. David, I want to thank you for talking with us today. It's really been a pleasure, and I appreciate what you're doing. You're in my mind, you're fighting a noble fight, and I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, there's other things I am fighting of sorts, but I think that was kind of, that defines it in some sense, I guess. So, and I like what you're doing too, because I think, you know, I think the more all this conversation goes out there, it's kind of, hopefully, tangibles come from it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.